This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.
Imagine paying a premium, like just to brainstorm with an AI, purely because it happens to be 2:00 p.m. on a Tuesday.
Right, or renting a highly advanced bionic humanoid robot by the day to work in your factory.
Only to realize you actually just rented the human being who is driving it via remote control.
Exactly.
Welcome to the end of the free tech era. We are basically watching the illusion of infinite digital abundance hit the very hard and very expensive wall of physical reality.
It is a profound structural shift. I mean, for the last two decades, the tech sector trained you to expect that digital actions, running a search, streaming a video, querying a massive database, that they were essentially weightless.
Yeah, the true physical costs were always hidden behind venture capital subsidies and, you know, massive server farms.
But that curtain is being violently pulled back.
And that is exactly what we are unpacking today. For this deep dive, we've been handed a massive stack of intelligence provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim. It's this incredibly comprehensive briefing dated July 1st, 2026. It covers rapid-fire updates across AI models, robotics, semiconductors, and telecom.
It's a lot to digest.
It is. But our mission today is to figure out what these specific updates mean for the global tech landscape, and more importantly, how they are actually going to impact the way you work and build products.
Because looking at a raw list of product launches and regulatory tweaks, it can easily just feel like noise. The real challenge is finding the structural signal beneath all of it.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because as former lawmaker Kyungjin Kim points out in his commentary on this briefing, there is a secret decoder ring for all these disparate updates.
Right. There's one single word that connects a new humanoid robot, a regulatory change on the Shanghai Stock Exchange, and a semiconductor factory markup.
And that word is price.
Yeah.
We are watching a massive industry transition from this free-for-all land grab phase to a really strict value harvesting phase.
And price signals are the ultimate truth tellers in any hyped up tech cycle. Companies can issue, you know, endless press releases about how their specific algorithm is going to change humanity.
Oh, absolutely.
But when the underlying cost of the silicon hardware jumps overnight, or the cost to ping an AI model suddenly fluctuates based on the time of day,
that strips away the marketing.
Yes. It tells us what is actually happening in the physical supply chain and where the true bottlenecks are located.
So if we are talking about price, I feel like we have to start with the raw cost of artificial thought itself. The briefing highlights that the official version of DeepSeek V4 is launching in mid-July.
Which is a major release.
It is, but here is where it gets incredibly fascinating. They are introducing the industry's first Peak Valley API pricing model. During peak hours, which they define as 9:00 a.m. to 12:00 p.m., and 2:00 CPM, and 2:00 p.m. every single day, the price of querying the model literally doubles.
Think about the economic ramifications of that for a moment. If you are a developer building a software as a service platform, your entire business model relies on predictable margins.
Right.
But suddenly, your core variable cost, the artificial reasoning engine powering your app, is acting like a physical utility.
Like electricity.
Exactly like electricity. DeepSeek is signaling that their physical servers just cannot handle peak enterprise demand. So they are treating compute just like the municipal power grid. It costs more to run your air conditioner on a hot July afternoon, and now it costs more to process complex text at 10:00 a.m. on a Tuesday.
It's essentially Uber surge pricing, but applied to cognitive labor.
That's a perfect way to put it.
But I was reading through lawyer Kyungjin Kim's notes, and there is this brilliant tactical takeaway here. Because of a simple one-hour time difference, Korean companies using the DeepSeek API can actually shift their automated bulk data processing schedules to exploit that gap.
Oh, wow. So they just time it differently.
Yeah. They can slip their massive workloads into the off-peak pricing windows. It's literal time zone arbitrage for artificial intelligence.
Which is incredibly clever, but I mean, it highlights just how sensitive the global market is becoming to these micro costs. We are talking about fractions of a cent per token, but the sheer volume of AI consumption right now is staggering.
It really is. Let's look at the June data from OpenRouter provided in the briefing. Chinese open weight models now command 48% of token consumption.
That's almost half the market.
And that volume is up 2.4 times in just 1 year. DeepSeek V4 Flash is sitting at number one overall, and six of the top 10 models are Chinese.
To put that in perspective for a second, a token is basically a fundamental unit of computational thought, like a piece of a word. So when a model commands 48% of all tokens consumed globally on a platform like OpenRouter, It represents a massive shift in who is providing the raw cognitive infrastructure for everyday applications.
But I'm looking at this volume data, and I just have to wonder about the business model here. If they are absolutely dominating the volume of tokens, does that actually translate to dominating the revenue?
That's the real question.
It reminds me of the early smartphone wars, you know.
Uh-huh.
Android had all the volume by putting cheap software on millions of devices, but Apple took home all the actual profit with the iPhone. Are we seeing the same dynamic in AI?
That is a perfect analogy, and the data backs up your deduction entirely. According to the exact same open router numbers, Anthropic, the U.S. company behind the Claude models, holds 46% of the revenue.
Wait, 46% of the revenue? With what volume?
Despite having only 12% of the actual token volume.
And 12% of the work, but almost half the money. That is wild.
It is. We are witnessing a hard bifurcation in the market. On one side, you have a low-cost, mass-market volume play, mostly dominated by Chinese models handling bulk translation, basic summaries, routine text generation.
The everyday stuff.
Right. And on the other side, you have a high-end premium market where companies are willing to pay top dollar to Anthropic or OpenAI for highly complex reasoning tasks, like advanced coding or, you know, legal analysis.
The sheer scale of the volume side is just stretching the limits of software engineering. Former lawmaker Kunjin Kim's materials mentioned that ByteDance's Dubao model family is hitting over 180 trillion daily token calls.
180 trillion.
Daily. And they're pushing the compute burden even further with multimodal AI. Because in early July, ByteDance is releasing Cadence 2.5, which is a native video generation model.
And the word native there is the crucial differentiator.
Right. It generates a 30-second 4K video from scratch. No stitching zipper clips together. It takes in 50 multimodal reference inputs, text, images, audio, and generates the video with synchronized audio natively.
And rival models are currently stuck at, what, 15 to 20 seconds?
Exactly.
So consider the underlying mechanism required to make that happen. Generating native multimodal video doesn't just scale linearly. The compute power required grows exponentially.
Right. It's not just double the video. It's way more than double the mass.
Exactly. Processing 180 trillion text tokens or rendering complex 30-second 4K videos hundreds of thousands of times a day, it puts an unimaginable strain on the hardware layer. Those digital requests do not just exist in the ether.
Which means all of this software ambition relies entirely on physical silicon chips. If the software is eating the world, it's choking on the hardware supply chain.
That is very true.
And that brings us to the second massive price signal we are seeing today, July 1st, 2026. About 20 semiconductor companies are simultaneously raising their prices.
Yeah, this includes major global players like Texas Instruments and Infineon, alongside key Chinese domestic firms. The price hikes for AI server and data center power management chips are jumping between 15 and 25%.
Think of the main AI processor, the GPU, as this massive, incredibly powerful, fuel-hungry engine. Those power management chips are the fuel injectors.
Right.
If you cannot regulate the insane amount of electricity these servers use, the whole system just melts down. You literally cannot build a data center without them. So why the sudden coordinated price spike?
It is a direct cascade from the AI software boom. The CEO of TSMC, which is the world's largest and most advanced chip foundry, recently told shareholders that AI demand is, in his words, insane. TSMC handles the absolute bleeding edge manufacturing, right? The incredibly small advanced nodes required for the brains of these AI systems. And because TSMC is dedicating practically all their capacity to high-margin AI accelerators, they are pushing out other customers.
Meaning the companies that just need regular mature chips,
yeah.
The 28-nanometer stuff used in electric vehicles or industrial automation, or just standard consumer electronics.
They're getting their calls sent to voicemail at TSMC.
Precisely. So that demand has to go somewhere, and those orders are overflowing into Chinese foundries like SMIC. SMIC is now operating its legacy 8-inch wafer production at 96% capacity.
They are essentially entirely full.
And when factories are full, prices go up. But the geopolitical implications of this capacity shift are huge.
Mm.
The briefing cites a stark conclusion from the Brookings Institution. They are officially calling it game over for U.S. AI chips dominating the Chinese market.
Game over. Wow.
Yeah. Domestic Chinese AI chips have crossed the threshold into majority territory, now holding a 52.3% market share.
That 52.3% figure is a critical tipping point. It signifies that the domestic ecosystem in China has reached a level of self-sufficiency, where they are no longer fundamentally reliant on global market leaders to build out their core AI infrastructure.
And this creates an incredibly tense geopolitical environment. Lawyer Kingjin Kim's insight heavily focuses on the squeeze this puts on countries caught in the middle of these two diverging tech ecosystems.
It forces a delicate, almost impossible tightrope walk for allied nations. To understand the mechanics of this, you just have to look at the recent diplomatic maneuvers. 35 countries just signed the Pexilica AI Opportunity Joint Declaration in Washington, D.C.
Right, which establishes frameworks like a semiconductor supply chain certification called PaxPath.
Exactly. But concurrently, a report from the Center for Strategic and International Studies, CSIS, called out South Korea specifically for lacking export controls that are equivalent to the U.S. Foreign Direct Product Rule, or FDPR.
And the FDPR is a highly complex mechanism, right?
Oh, extremely. It doesn't just stop American companies from selling to restricted entities. It claims jurisdiction over any foreign-made item if it is a direct product of U.S. technology or software.
So it's an incredibly long arm of regulatory reach.
Yes.
So we have to look impartially at the bind this creates, as outlined by former lawmaker Kunjin Kim, because South Korea is participating in Pexilica, working alongside Western allies. However, their actual semiconductor exports to China surged by 243% in May alone.
233%.
It's a massive economic driver for them.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, the U.S. Congress is pushing forward the MTCH Act, which explicitly aims to mandate that allied nations implement strict FDPR equivalent export controls.
It is a profound structural contradiction. You have undeniable economic incentives. I mean, a 243% surge in exports is critical to their national economy.
Absolutely.
While binding diplomatic and security agreements are pulling them in the exact opposite direction, they are being asked to sever a highly lucrative trade pipeline to remain in compliance with an allied supply chain framework.
It's a rapidly narrowing tightrope. But, you know, let's follow the money here. Whether you are navigating global export controls or you are simply trying to buy marked-up power management chips, the reality is that participating in the next generation of AI is becoming unbelievably expensive.
Prohibitively expensive.
Yeah. So if you are a brilliant startup, but you are currently operating at a massive loss because you are buying all these expensive chips, how are you surviving?
Yeah.
You can't just keep going back to venture capitalists forever.
You need an ocean of cash, which leads to a major shift in public capital markets. The state essentially has to step in and rewrite the rules to provide financial oxygen.
Which brings us to the Shanghai Stock Exchange. They just introduced something called the Star Market Fifth Standard. This new rule allows AI large model companies to IPO, like to go public, and raise money from everyday investors, even if they have zero revenue and zero profit.
Right. Permitting a zero profit IPO, well, that happens during boom cycles, but allowing a zero revenue company to go public, that is practically unheard of in traditional stable markets. It's highly toxic to traditional risk models.
The only requirement is that they hit an estimated valuation of 4 billion RMB, and they need to have at least one scaled product released. And the market is already moving on this. A major AI player called Zipu is currently aiming for a 15 billion RMB IPO under these exact new rules.
This is a deliberate, highly calculated state strategy. By absorbing the risk and opening the doors of the public capital markets to loss-making AI firms, they are ensuring these companies don't suffocate under the weight of chip costs while they train their next-generation models.
And lawyer Kunjin Kim provides a really stark warning here when comparing ecosystems. He contrasts this move in Shanghai with South Korea's CoSDQ exchange. On the KZ2, massive deficit AI startups struggle immensely to get listed.
Because the traditional metrics still apply?
Right. The capital doors are largely closed to them because those traditional financial metrics are still rigidly applied.
And in a hyper-capital intensive industry like artificial intelligence, capital itself is the ultimate moat. A difference in regulatory ability to raise money today will inevitably harden into a permanent technological gap tomorrow.
Yeah.
If you can't raise public funds to buy the marked up chips, you cannot train the multimodal model. And if you can't train the model, you lose the market entirely.
It's a literal race to fund the future. Okay, so we've covered the software reasoning costs, the silicon hardware bottlenecks, and the sheer capital required to build it all. But what happens when you take all three of those things, the algorithmic brain, the chips, and the funding, and you put them into a physical body?
Oh, embodied intelligence, robotics.
Yeah. Yes. Let's talk about humanoids in the wild.
This is where the digital constraints we've been discussing literally step out into the physical world.
Exactly. So on June 30th, a company called Yugi Tech officially launched their U1 series. And they didn't just show a shiny prototype in a lab. They launched a consumer brand with over 50 ultra-lifelike bionic models. The specifications on the top-tier male model are wild.
Oh, I saw this.
It stands 183 centimeters tall, so about 6 feet, and weighs 42 kilograms, and it has 88 degrees of freedom.
And just for context, degrees of freedom dictate how fluidly a machine can move. 88 means it can blink, smile, tilt its head naturally, and articulate its hands with extreme precision. It's very human-like.
It also features an encrypted emotional AI model running locally on the device to read and react to conversational context. And the price tag, the absolute top-tier model is 990,000 RMB.
That's a premium price.
It is, but the real story is their mid-tier pro model, which costs about 169,800 RMB. They open pre-orders and have already crossed 13,361 orders, mostly for that pro model. They are targeting mass production of over 10,000 units this year alone.
And this immediate commercial traction is shifting the financial forecasts for the entire sector. Morgan Stanley recently doubled its 2026 shipment forecast for Chinese humanoids, raising it from 28,000 to 50,000 units.
Wow, almost double.
Yeah, and part of this is driven by massive state procurement, like the State Grid Corporation putting out a $1 billion tender. But you also have major EV makers like XPeng entering the fray. They're porting their automotive manufacturing scale directly into robotics.
Okay, 13,000 orders is massive. A $1 billion utility tender is massive. But I have to push back on the narratives here.
Okay, sure.
I remember the early days of self-driving cars, where companies promised full autonomy, but it was really just a guy with a joystick behind a curtain.
Right, the Mechanical Turk scenario.
Exactly. Are these humanoids actually fully autonomous, walking into factories and independently taking over workflows, or is this heavily layered with hype?
That is the essential question. We have to separate the undeniable commercial momentum from the very grounded technical reality. The briefing points to a recent CNN deep dive into the humanoid rental market that answers this perfectly. The autonomy you're picturing is definitively not there yet.
Wait, let's pause on that. There is an active humanoid rental market.
Oh, there is. A company called Agibot set up a subsidiary called Sharebot. And in just 3 months, they received 5,500 rental orders, charging roughly 3,500 RMB a day for a robot.
Okay, so people are renting them.
Yes. But here is the Wizard of Oz catch regarding autonomy.
Right.
That daily rental fee includes a human operator.
Oh. So you aren't just renting a highly advanced independent robot. You're renting the human being who is driving the robot via remote control.
Exactly. CNN reported observing 120 humanoids working in a Shenzhen facility, and they were actively guided by humans using handheld controllers to perform simple, repetitive tasks.
That is wild.
Even Ubitech, the company boasting 13,000 pre-orders, admits that their top models only achieve about 80% of human productivity in tasks like box sorting.
That is fascinating. So the physical hardware, you know, the joints, the motors, the battery life, that is scaling beautifully thanks to EV supply chains.
Yes, the body is ready.
But the spatial intelligence, the AI's ability to independently understand, navigate, and react to unpredictable physical environments, that is lagging far behind. We're essentially building remote-controlled avatars for factory workers right now.
And while the spatial intelligence catches up to the hardware, regulators are already stepping in to police how these machines interact with us. The briefing notes a looming deadline. On July 15th, brand new regulations on AI human-like interaction services go into effect.
Okay, what do those cover?
Well, one of the core mandates is that it strictly bans virtual lovers for minors.
Which opens up a massive regulatory gray area. Because that Ubitech U1 robot we just discussed explicitly features an encrypted emotional AI model designed to read and react to human feelings.
Exactly.
So if a consumer buys a highly realistic, emotionally responsive, 6-foot-tall bionic robot for their home, does it fall under this new virtual lover ban? How fast can the law adapt when the hardware is dropping new features every single month?
It is the classic pacing problem of technology and regulation, but the stakes are exponentially higher when the algorithm has a physical body standing in your living room.
So if we pull all of these complex threads together, what is the ultimate takeaway from former lawmaker Kung Jin Kim's briefing? It really comes back to that central thesis. The free ride era of artificial intelligence is over. We have entered the era of value harvesting.
Every layer of the stack is now hyper-focused on monetization and cost recovery. DeepSeek is implementing surge-priced APIs because server compute is scarce. 20 semiconductor companies are simultaneously raising prices to fund the physical data centers.
Yeah.
Governments are bending stock market rules to keep AI startups solvent. And humanoids are commanding premium daily rental fees even when they require a human pilot. Everything is being aggressively priced.
The cost of intelligence, both digital and physical, is fundamentally shifting. And for you, listening right now, why does this matter? Because whether you are a software developer managing a SaaS product, a supply chain manager looking at chip costs, or simply trying to figure out where your investments should go over the next 5 years, this new cost structure will dictate the future.
The price of artificial reasoning is about to become as dynamic and as foundational to the global economy as the price of a barrel of oil or a kilowatt of electricity. It will draw a hard line between which applications are economically viable and which are simply too expensive to exist.
Which leaves you with a pretty wild scenario to think about.
Mm-hmm.
If AI reasoning is rapidly being priced exactly like electricity, with peak hour surges and off-peak discounts and robotic laborers being rented out by the day, how will that fundamentally redesign the traditional 9-to-5 workday?
That's a great question.
Will you soon find yourself scheduling your team's most complex AI-heavy brainstorming sessions for 1.00 a.m., just to save a few thousand dollars on your monthly cognitive utility bill?
The physical constraints of the world always assert themselves eventually.
The era of infinite weightless technology is officially over. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep asking questions, keep looking for the signal in the noise, and stay curious.
This program is provided by Lawyer Kyungjin Kim.